Welcome to DCU's Teaching Enhancement Unit Podcasts, an audio discovery series for teaching and learning in higher education. Hello, my name is Lisa Donaldson, and welcome to another episode in DCU's Teaching Enhancement Unit Podcast series called A Discovery Series for Teaching and Learning in Higher Education. This podcast is part of the transformation and innovation theme, and I would like to welcome David Kennedy here today, who is the Assistant Professor in Religious Education at the Institute of Education. Welcome, David. Let me start by just asking you to introduce yourself a little bit, please.
Thanks very much for having me, Lisa. As you just said, I'm currently an Assistant Professor in Religious Education at the Institute of Education in DCU. I have the pleasure of working with wonderful colleagues and academics up there, both within the RE team and across the Institute. But prior to coming to DCU, my background itself, it's interesting to say that I'm teaching primary school teachers when I've never myself taught in a primary school classroom. My background is theology and philosophy, and I worked really for a number of years as a researcher for Catholic education bodies, national bodies within Catholic education in Ireland, including the Catholic Primary Schools Managerial Association, the Catholic Schools Partnership, the Association of Trustees of Catholic Schools, and others. And I suppose it interesting journey into where I've landed up, but in a strange way, the whole myriad of everything has come together to kind of give me, I suppose, a different outlook when it comes to the cohorts that I'm dealing with, particularly within religious education in a massive time of change as well.
Exactly. And speaking of the cohorts that you're dealing with and you're teaching with at the minute, perhaps you might like to just outline the module that we're going to speak about today, and how it would traditionally have been delivered prior to this time of crisis.
So the module we're going to talk about today is ED2018, is the module code, and the topic is religious education and the child. Traditionally, the module was delivered via face-to-face teaching, obviously, with plenary lectures and seminars. The student size would have been about between 400 to 410, let's say, or even 415 at times. And the assessment method was traditional written 2,000 word assignment. So in every sense of the word, it was very traditional.
Yeah,
I suppose it's the only way I'd said it. Myself, I'm the module coordinator for it and the sole lecturer on the course. And we come together as an RE team then to deliver the seminars. But all topics and content are ultimately the responsibility of the module coordinator.
Okay. So then in March, we had a pandemic unfold.
Yeah.
So particularly with such a large cohort that you have with this particular module, what kind of changes then did you begin to put into place or envisage for future delivery of the module?
Well, when I managed to pull myself together after having a mental breakdown, I decided to, because you already have the panic before before the pandemic, like you're already facing the challenge of having such a large number of students. So, and how do I suppose, facilitate a meaningful learning experience for these students when you have a ratio of 1 to 400, right, so in this large session? And how can we make best use of the seminars then to try and get into some kind of real real face-to-face meaningful activity and learning-based activities? So when we came along with the pandemic, right, it was number one, it was a panic station, saying, right, how am I going to make this work? Mm-hmm. But then the real concern was, how do I make this module a really meaningful experience for students in a time of absolute chaos? And how do I actually keep this structured and nearly like a space where they know what they're going to get, they know what they have to do. So clear direction and really something interesting and dynamic, and maybe something that actually speaks to the reality of which they're experiencing now within a pandemic, and when there's really a heightened awareness of our humanity, yeah, and the finiteness of our existence as well. So trying to, I suppose, bring in these big questions in a time where they're really poignant, and they're always poignant in my opinion, but that's another story, a story for another day, but particularly within this context that the students were then experiencing. I kind of sat down and said, well, how do I, I suppose, enhance this module, because it was already on the cards anyway. Mm-hmm. So like even prior to COVID, like I was thinking of, you're always thinking of ways in which to develop the module that you have and what way can I make it, I suppose, a bit more dynamic. And particularly, I'm not long in DCU. I'm about a year and a half in DCU. So these modules, I'm still making my own. You know, mm-hmm. I'm starting, still trying to develop them and set them up and establish them. So, and it was, it really did provide an opportunity when moving to online to try out something new, and you're kind of given a green light to go ahead and to play and have fun. And I suppose the big thing that was really helpful for us in DCU was the teaching enhancement unit had so many courses and so much CPD. Now I just done it all. I just literally clicked into that mode. When I didn't know anything, I made contact and I just really upskilled.
Yeah.
And when I felt I kind of reached the point of, well, I know what I want to do now and I feel like I can begin to want to design, I went ahead and done it. So one of the big shifts that we kind of set out was that, in light of everything, to have a clear pedagogical approach for the module. And we've done this across the RE modules. Cora O'Farrell, Dr. Cora O'Farrell, done it the same with her module. And we had this conversation about it. So beginning with the child, then out into wider theory, and then back into pedagogy. So always beginning with the human person. And particularly in these times and the end that we're living in, this is really, really important. So even that as a structure of how our teams and topics would develop was really important. So I suppose that was the key. I suppose the beginning of the changes and the beginning of the kind of the conversation. So there was a couple of key things that I changed when it came to the module. Number one, we lost all synchronous teaching, which was not what the original idea was for moving online. That's a big one, right? That was a big kick, you know, kind of going, oh, right. But look, that's the way things happen. You had to roll with the punches and you had to get going and design something. So now you didn't have the opportunity of that even face-to-face synchronous experience with the students. So how then do I have a presence with my students? How then do I create a relationship with my students? How then do I create a relationship amongst the students around my module? How do I actually get them to meaningfully engage when I'm an app? Technically, I suppose I'm trying to create a presence and an absence. And this paradox, in many ways, was like Kierkegaard's idea of the absolute paradox, where it's the passionate thought. And it was this kind of this idea of opportunity, potentiality came from that paradox. So I suppose the main thing for me then was, I tried to make myself visible everywhere. So like even when it came to designing my loop page, which was really important, because the design of my loop page was the face of the module. It was the point of contact. It was the learning hub for them for this topic. They weren't going to have me sitting there or standing there, should I say, at the front of a lecture hall to just spring questions or for me to address in that wider space. So everything kind of, I started with the idea of how do I move what I've done practically in a face-to-face setting into a learning online experience. So not about reinventing the wheel to begin with, but how do I do what I've done best before in this space?
And I know from speaking with you previously that you kept the concept of universal design for learning to the fore when you were doing that.
Oh, massively. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I really took this opportunity to really revamp the module, especially then we have wonderful ISL pathway students that I had the pleasure of working with last year as well. And I was aware they were coming into my module in second year, which was really important to me, that I was like, right, now here's another context that I have to be aware of, that these students are in my class and how they're going to navigate this this experience for themselves, because I won't be there all the time for them. So universal design for learning was massive to it. So like always at the front of the mind was multiple means of engagement, multiple means of representation, and multiple means of expression. So this all came into the idea even of how the content was provided to them, the design of the page, the access to the meaningful content that I had put up. So all content was both really in multimedia form and in written format. They had a choice then as well around what they could really do a deep dive in. So the assessment method, which we'll get to now in a second, really facilitated that shift in the class. But first off, is really being aware of the students that were going to be, that were in my class, and trying to be as aware as I possibly could of their needs and what they needed to be there for them to be able to effectively open up their agency to really be student. and to really then encounter and experience a really educational journey. And this is where the assessment came in as well. So we, in designing the page, I used Loop Books. I said, right, let's clean up the page. There's an awful lot of stuff. Let's clean it all up and make it concise. So for each topic then, you had a Loop Book and a video of me explaining an overarching explanation of the topic. So before they even open the book, they have it there clear what this topic is about and what they're going to find in this book. And they open up the book and they're immediately encounter first page is the lecture video and then a PDF version of the lecture slides. So they have the video and they have, which was recorded, pre-recorded asynchronously on Zoom and edited where it needed to be. And then also then sent off for either interpretation by our ISL interpreters, or if I was prepared enough, the lecture was recorded, uploaded to YouTube and auto caption. Was allowed enough time to actually to interpret the videos, and it was left as is. Now I didn't get that good until near the end, so every piece of media on the page that was any kind of visual media, any kind of like videos or anything like that, was all interpreted by ISL to begin with. So all of the topics, all of this and directions of usage. I also, one of the really useful things with Loop Books as well was actually making use of the module handbook for students. And in the module handbook, students found the lecture topics, their learning outcomes, the assessment details, a complete recommended reading list that was all the readings were hyperlinked straight to the one. So that was another thing, even that it wasn't until I sat down to try and create my reading list, I was like, well, hold on, we don't have the library anymore. In the sense of physical library for books. So I had to revamp my reading list to suit ebooks and journals. And I said, look, they had enough going on. I wanted to make it as clean as possible so that it was one click away for them when they wanted to access stuff. So all of this was all put in the reading. So the whole reading list was accessible. Communication procedure then, I made it very clear from the get-go of just how our communication was going to happen. This all had to be done, you see, at least, this all had to be done because it was all asynchronous. You know, it wasn't off the cuff, random, there wasn't going to be a place for this, kind of way.
So clear structure.
Because you also wanted to be mindful, when you're dealing with that large student number, and I've had the days where I've come into so many emails and all this, when there's a panic, one small error can create so much panic and confusion when there is that distance between the educator and the students in that sense. So clear communication procedure, I put in that a 48-hour window for response to emails or anything like that, so they knew that if they had to correspond with me in that sense. So I made myself very much available. Because I was talking to office hours, kind of did go sideways a bit, let's just say, over the time. So I was more available in the evenings then. Then I even made a point in this kind of having the support resources that were in the college for counselling and everything like this all available within the handbook as well during this time, because of the stress and the pressures that students were under.
That's great. And I know we spoke earlier, and I think that pedagogy of care was critical during this period and now. And obviously, it looks like for the next semester as well.
I suppose, Lisa, it was in many respects that you have to stand, like let's say, from it's Catholic religious education that I'm teaching within DCU, and how am I myself as a Catholic supposed to stand up there and say one thing, teach one thing, and promote one thing, and then go and do another? It doesn't work. And what we do, and what the whole central focus of Catholic education and Catholic religious education is the human person. The human person is paramount always, regardless of race, color, or creed. It doesn't matter. It's the human person in that wide sense that's really the heart and focus of what we do and the whole educational journey. And that's really important to us within religious education. And that folded in really well, actually, into the online experience, because even the whole idea of this presence and absence and kind of this presence in this online space was really important. And that was, it fit really well with an online pedagogy, creating this learning environment all about this generational community and everything that was there. But I kind of took a step further as well. I was kind of conscious of the fact that we were doing an awful lot of theory, we were doing an awful lot of here's the manuals and all that, but I wanted to try and build up the community of practice a bit more in the module. So I came up with this idea of creating podcasts from the classroom. And I had five episodes, basically, of it. And these are just, they could use any of this stuff in the assessment. And I know I'm delaying getting to the assessment part, but I said, look, we'll scurry through what we covered in the module transformation anyway to begin with. I had Zoom conversations with people out there working in education. So the likes of Elaine Mann, Dr. Elaine Mann, Miriam McCabe and Alan Hines, who worked with CPSMA and St. Senan's Education Centre, and Ian Corbett, a prior graduate as well of DCU, and Grace Doolin as well, another graduate of the BEd programme. And we spoke about a range of issues. So like the first episode was on inclusion. The second episode was on partnership within education, everything from that wider idea of partnership amongst all the educational bodies and the structures within education in Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, down to the relationship of partnership in the Catholic school between school, parish and family. All of these coming together. And then we looked at the experience then of recent graduates and early career teachers in using Grow and Love, which is the religious education program for Catholic schools, and what was their experience of teaching RE now out there in the environment? What was the difference between the lovely dream world of daffodils and butterflies that I was telling them and the reality out there in the classroom? So it was really that they found that very interesting, which was really helpful. It really appeared in the assessment model. The other part then is that, like I mentioned earlier, we had seminars that were normally done in face-to-face setting where we done really practical engagement with lesson plans and the actual program, the actual teaching of the program, which was then we were kind of rattling our heads, how are we going to manage this? And even when we had thought about doing face-to-face teaching, or trying to secure, I suppose, face-to-face time on campus, it was for these seminars that we were conscious. It wasn't about the plenary lectures, it was about the seminars. So with the seminars, we created a different form. We came together as a team and had a conversation, because this was done as well across another module in terms of seminars with ED 1010, which was Foundations in Catholic Religious Education, and that was taught by Cora O'Farrell. And Cora and myself had conversations about how we'd structure these seminars. And we came up with the idea, wouldn't it be great in this setting now, in the world of Zoom, that we're able to have a conversation with all the members of the RE team together, that we'd all come together around the topic of the seminars. So they range from biblical literacy to interreligious literacy, curricular integration, so like with the wider curriculum in RE, down to ecological education and spirituality. So there was a real richness to these topics. And we kind of just, we took off. And the hardest part about this was that we went completely honest. Like we took off the veil and we just had it out. We had conversations. And the irony of the whole thing, even all the angst of kind of opening yourself up to that, the students actually saw the authenticity and that we were being genuine. And it wasn't a show. And they bought into it because this all came, and I'm saying all this because this all came back in the assessment, and also it also came back in student surveys that I held at the end of the term. Even past the grading phase, let's just say, they weren't trying to just rub me up the right way, so they got through. But we got together and we recorded these videos, and that was the opening part, because normally in a face-to-face setting, we begin the seminars with a short little presentation, a PowerPoint. So we said we keep somewhat the same structure. And then I went off and I created H5P interactive presentations for them. So that was what the latter part of the seminar. And then at the end, because I wanted to not only register that they've actually done this, but also I wanted in the seminar setting, we hear back from them. But this is where we actually get to feel more comfortable. It's a smaller class number. They feel more willing to open up and be honest. It's a better space for communication and real teaching to take place with the students. I wanted to hear back. What I've realized for myself in this whole online transformation is that as much as I'd love to be like, it's for the students, I want to know them. I kind of like, people are really important in that sense to my mind. Like, I kind of want to know I want to know them. I want to know a bit about them. I want to know what their fears are so I can, and all this stuff. But it's, we created a student forum, right? So at the end of the seminar, it always ended with a forum task. So like they're either directed off to the PDF versions of the program to just even have a look through and give some feedback on what their initial reactions were and all of this and how they experienced the seminars, etc. along the way. That actually took off really well. I was really skeptical at the beginning. I was like, they're not going to really engage with this, but they did, you know, and it was almost like it was controlled, you see. They were always geared towards, once I knew where I wanted to take them, mm-hmm. I was able to put in the guides and the framework and the structures that would guide them to eventually take part. And then of course, like everything, when they saw the other students in the class post, and that's when it took off, took in a way, and that was really, really great for us as regards the insights we were getting, and for the students to be able to voice anything that they needed. We also had I scheduled drop-in sessions where possible around submission time to assist them with assessment of that. So now we're up to the big one, Lisa, the assessment.
Let's talk about what you did with assessment.
Yeah, so the assessment was a game changer, really. In many ways, had a big learning curve, big learning experience for me. Things I won't do again, things I will do again. But the big thing for me in using, because UDL was at the forefront of my mind, I wanted to open up the assessment to the students, for them to be able to really express themselves and to really engage in a meaningful way at their own agency and what they really wanted to engage with meaningfully, and even how they done it. So I transitioned from a traditional assignment to an e-portfolio using Loop Reflect. And it really was a wonderful experience. It was nerve-wracking at the beginning, as poor Lisa will testify. But we got there. And so I changed up the assessment to what were once predetermined lecture or assessment topics or wider discussion topics that they would go and do their written assignments on. Opened up to choosing artifacts from the module to critically engage with. So I changed from a once-off written assessment at the end of the module to a three-part continuous assessment that ran over the whole course of the module in the semester. So the way the breakup of that was I broke up the grade as well. So for the first, for submission one was worth 20%, submission two, 20%. And then the final reflection was worth 60%. I also tried to work off of their experience with doing their reflective tutorials around being a reflective practitioner that's covered across the BEd course, which was really, really facilitated, but I really piggybacked on this idea. So even on that sense, I ended the end of term assessment that they had to do, a reflection, was a meta reflection. So the first two reflections were critical reflections that had to zone in on two or more artifacts from any it could be anything that was presented to them on the Loop page. So the only remit was that it had to be from ED2018 and it had to be provided the avenue through that Loop page. So it could be a podcast, a lecture, a reading, a video, a seminar, and it could have been as simple as something someone said to a whole reading. They were completely opened up. I didn't even put a framework or a template in place for them, for their portfolio. They started from blank. It could look how they wanted. It could be what it wanted. They could do whatever they wanted. The key aspect that made all this possible, though, was the rubric, a rubric called the Holy Grail rubric, which I'll forever be so thankful for existing. And all I had to do was one or two slight alterations to suit the module and what needed to be done. And I actually imported that in. It's already in for those who's teaching in DCU. It's flags up, it's already in Loop. You can just transport it in, it's there already. And what that means then is that when you have the rubric there in built, when you're correcting, it's right there, you're clicking your rubric. And it also acted, because I have a large student cohort, as a feedback mechanism, because like everybody wants to be able to give back individualized feedback. That becomes an issue when you have about 900 students in a semester. It's not possible. It's not actually feasible, particularly with across the board with deadlines and everything that you have to have the grades in and published and officially and everything like this. So the rubric, a really detailed rubric, go so far. And the fact that this was already there and that I didn't have to create one from scratch was so, so helpful and so important. So that was, I had that in loop. So I had it set up for myself that, you know, when it came along, I'm going to be grading these with the rubric along the way. Also then, like, students had the option when it came to doing the actual portfolio as well. They could, you know, they could write up their reflection. They could do a video recording themselves. They could do an audio file. They had a real range of options at their disposal to put it up. And the rubric fitted that wideness and broadness of it, because it was about the creativity, their depth of understanding, all of this stuff that came through in the document. Now, I would have thought to begin with, I was very much a traditional assignment guy, and this really did open up my eyes to being aware of, right, we can have all the ideas we want of the students we want and of the lofty of the, but I suppose in the beginning, you're not setting out to create mini professors or mini academics. Mm-hmm. What we're really trying to do is we're trying to develop early career teachers, initial, and that was the big thing. This is initial, like the BEd is initial teacher training. It's the beginning of their teaching journey and their career. So really what we want them to do is to know what they're about, to start off and to get on the road and be able to do it. So I think they actually got more out of this e-portfolio experience because they said it themselves in the student feedback, because they were able to pick and choose what spoke to them, what caught their eye, and they got to think about, then critically reflect on, well, where was I before this, before encountering this? Why did this affect me so much? What is after doing for me? And how is this going to affect my teaching practice into the future? And how have I grown as a person from engaging this, particularly in a subject like religious education, particularly in a subject when it comes to religion? Mm-hmm. And in general, everybody has presuppositions and preassumptions, but there's archetypes in place that have developed over time through culture, through society at large, that actually run juxtaposed to the idea, or contrary to, really, or any kind of understanding of religion that they'd actually encounter when they come to actually academically engage with it, and what they'd encounter actually in a religious education program, and particularly a Catholic religious education program. So there was an awful lot of this stuff going on in the students and their, as they were developing throughout the module, which was really facilitated by the assessment as well.
The assessment design, along with, I suppose, the medium that you chose for the delivery of that assessment, just provided that additional flexibility for the students to focus in and, as you say, to give them agency.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, 100%.
So just to finish up, David, that's a fascinating conversation. You've completely transformed the module over the last number of months. Can I ask, what will you keep when we do get back to face-to-face teaching again? What do you feel has worked better in this online scenario, perhaps, than in the face-to-face environment?
There's an awful lot I'm going to carry forward. This was not in any sense a once flash in the pan exercise. Personally, I think anyway, the way in which we teach at third level is changed indefinitely from this experience. I don't think it's, and what we do as educators has changed, you know, indefinitely in light of COVID. We've all acquired a mass amount of skills, everything. But I suppose for me carrying forward, the biggest thing for me was, which was really brilliant for the students, was that bringing together the RE team as a whole, because they got to hear all of us. Right, so in this world of Zoom, it made it far easier to bring everyone together and to, when amongst the team, to provide a really meaningful engagement. And they got to hear from voices that they wouldn't normally. The biggest one, though, I'd have to say, was the building up of the community of practice was made. So I didn't have to drag someone up from Limerick. I didn't have to drag someone up from Donegal, or down from Donegal, should I say, or across from Galway. They were able to do it from their living room, and we were able to create this conversation and make it available to students. These are really invaluable voices that they need to hear. They shouldn't just be hearing on school placements. This should be very much part of their learning experience, connected with this professional experience. So that was definitely one I carry forward. The loop, the design of the page, definitely going to carry forward. Loop Reflect, I'm going to carry it forward. I think the potential is really, really there. Do you know what I mean? For the learning, but I found it was really good, not just towards the learning out, not about the outcome, the learning outcomes, but it was really rewarding for me as an educator to see the transformation of the students over the term. It also acted as an avenue in to be able to actually assess not only, you know, their knowledge, but where they were at what needed to be developed as I went along, because the podcast didn't actually emerge till about 2 weeks into term. It came to me more like when we had started into term. I was like, oh, this would be brilliant if we could bring this in. I started, and I just tried one, and it just snowballed again. So the podcasts, I definitely continue. The video conversation with the team around topics, definitely there. That might even fit in with the podcast if we're back to face-to-face seminar settings again, you know. And I think the whole online thing would really assist. Like, everything I've done, I feel like, will only enhance my face-to-face teaching. It won't replace it. You cannot replace the teacher or the educator in the classroom. It just doesn't work. And that really came out in the online experience, because I was at pains. You're always at pains to try and have that human dimension, that humanity to that, you know, that can very easily fall into a very cold and detached space. Mm-hmm. You have to really always keep the student in mind and that relationship and the relationships there. So that was the big thing that I came out with from Loop, was that using Loop in a more meaningful way. So my virtual learning environment in a more meaningful way to enhance what I'm doing face to face. So it wasn't an either or, but a both and, I think, was the big one.
Wonderful. What a lovely positive note to end on. So can I just say thanks very much for sharing your thoughts over the last number of months with us this morning, and best of luck with the next semester.
Thanks, Lisa. And thanks very much to everyone in the Teaching Enhancement Unit.